I will repeat shortly what we were doing 2 days ago. Our ultimate goal is to study prime numbers. And zeta function is a very powerful tool to study the distribution of prime numbers. And we need to study zeros of this function. And if you look at them, on the one hand, they are very regular. We expect that the real part of each non-trivial zero is equal to 1/2. But if you look at the imaginary parts, they produce impression of a chaos. There are no evident rules how they are connected between themselves. And there are two points of views, two approaches to study zeta function. One is just to treat imaginary parts of real of non-trivial zeros as random numbers and to apply notions and ideas from probability theory and study corresponding quantities. And this approach is productive. It allows to give some plausible conjectures and verify them. But my point of view is different. I believe that zeros of zeta functions are very special, very particular numbers, and we need, so to say, study each of them individually and find properties of individual numbers or small groups of numbers. And I try to, develop philosophy that zeta zeros are very knowledgeable in some maybe not precise sense. And I already gave example. For example, zeta zeros know about prime numbers via von Mankell theorem. I explained my point of view on von Mankell theorem, and I will show it a minute later. And also we saw that initial non-trivial zeros know somehow about the initial trivial zeros, about other non-trivial zeros, and the poles of the zeta function. So, via this factor canceling the pole. This is how we say that zeta zeros know about prime numbers. We just plot I'm afraid it's almost exhausted. It was on in the morning, so it was on the whole night. Sorry. And then we observe jumps at integers and jumps of special size, and we can extract information about prime numbers. For the other types of extracting knowledge from Dirichlet, from zeros, we can study such sums. We don't have any other pointer or batteries. We consider finite Dirichlet series of odd size n equal to n plus 1. And we initially demand that this finite sum should have m pairs of conjugate zeros, the initial zeros of zeta function. And it turned out that these finite sums have very interesting properties. So how we can calculate these numbers, lowercase delta. We need to consider such determinant, which vanish as soon as s is equal to one of the small non-trivial zeros. This determinant is formally a finite Dirichlet series. And all what we need is to make some kind of normalization. So all these lowercase deltas are just such minus. We need to cross out the last column and to delete particular row. So calculation of all these lowercase deltas requires calculation of n, capital N, determinants of size n minus 1 by n minus 1. But as I said 2 days ago, In fact, all these calculations can be organized in a very economical way, and we can calculate all of them, and also for all small values of lowercase n, just in capital N cube arithmetic operations. So after that, we make normalization and obtain our finite Dirichlet series. And it turned out that it approximates very well great number of trivial zeros, non-trivial zeros that were not used in construction of these expressions. And also they approximate zeros of this additional factor that cancels the pole. One more way to extract information about prime numbers. It's not so explicit, but still. I introduce these quantities mu sub n n. They are just linear combinations of particular deltas, where mu of one argument is just classical Möbius function. And these are explicit expressions for these initial mu's. So these are just expressions for these quantities, and they turned out to be very, very small numbers. But we can treat the situation in a different way. We can forget about definition of this mu and just try to look for relation, linear relations between the deltas, just numerically. There are efficient programs like LLM method to find such relations. And we'll find that such expressions turned out to be very small. And then we can look at these expressions closely, and we'll find that they have very nice structure. Each time we have the first largest second coefficients, and the remaining are just divisors of this index here. 5, 2, and so on. And they are either plus or minus 1, depending whether the ratio has odd or even number of prime factors, and is 0 if this ratio is not square free. So in this way, zeros encode the divisibility property, divisibility relation between integers, and they encode Möbius function, which clearly is connected with prime factorization. Now we will examine deltas individually, not as coefficients in the capital delta, but by themselves, so to say. So here, this is a picture which I believe is familiar to you, the typical behavior of coefficients delta. Coefficients with odd second index are close to 1, with even index close to minus 1. And then they gradually go to 0. But on such a picture, we cannot see any details. So we need to do something different. And we will do the following. We will take a coefficient, subtract 1. We will study now the upper part of this picture. Take the absolute value. And this will be very small quantities. So to see anything, we will take logarithm of these numbers. And we'll plot all of them. Let us examine what happens. We see that the points are in several levels, horizontal levels. What is this level? It corresponds to big value of logarithm, so it corresponds to big values of this difference. And when lowercase n is even, it's minus 1, so this is minus 2, and this is log of 2. So all points with even lowercase n go here. Here we have numbers going with step 6, 3, 9, 15, and so on. And here we have numbers 5, 25, 35, 55, 65, 85. So all numbers that are divisible by 5, but not divisible neither by 2 nor by 3. And here we encounter numbers 7, 49, 77, 91, and so on. It is all numbers divisible by 7, but not divisible neither by 5, nor by 3, nor by 2. What will we have here? 11, 121, 143, and so on. Numbers divisible by 11, but not divisible by smaller numbers. Next row, divisibility by 13, and just 2 points corresponding to divisibility of by 17. And what are these numbers? What indices produce these points? The remaining numbers are just prime numbers. And so we should call that this is sieve of Eratosthenes. So look what happens. Eratosthenes was a human being. And he invented a process how to generate prime numbers. And what was done here? They used a stupid computer first to calculate zeros of zeta function, which is defined without any mention of prime numbers. Then we calculated some determinants, and then we produced such a plot. And surprisingly, it produces a picture similar to what is produced by sieve of Eratosthenes. So this is just one way in which zeros of zeta function knows about prime numbers. Okay, so here I showed the picture for uppercase n equal to 3101, but for lowercase n only up to 300. And you can imagine that our happiness cannot continue forever. If we plot all of them, we will see such a picture, that these levels continue until they touch some mysterious curve, and they don't go any longer. What is this curve? It's a great mystery for me. All what I was able to do is to make a heuristic guess what this limiting curve, the curve in the limit when capital N goes to infinity, should be. So this is a picture for N a bit bigger, but this picture is normalized. So on this axis we have N divided by capital N, so the largest number is 1, and here we have normalization, we again divide by N. And that looks if these pictures approach some limiting picture when n goes to infinity, and this is this expected curve defined by such a bit strange equation. What is of interest, but I have no idea, is to determine what are the values of these levels, how much they go. So they somehow approach this limiting point, realize 3, 5, 7, and other indexes. Okay, so this is the same picture. We see these levels. But I believe you do not believe that they are all equal numbers. They look to be equal, but they are not equal. And we can consider each level separately. And here is the plot corresponding to the, let us consider closely this level of numbers divisible by 3, but not divisible by 2. So we take every third value for the third index, second index, and subtract not one, but the very first delta. It looks like, again, the sieve, but not exactly. So let us examine. At the top we have, as before, all values of m divisible by 2. But the next level corresponds to numbers divisible by 5, but not divisible by 2. There is no level for 3 here. We took every third number. This is level corresponds to numbers divisible by 7, but not divisible neither by 5 nor by 2. And here we have 3, 9, and so on. So numbers divisible by 3, but not divisible by neither by 2, nor by 5, nor by 7, go to this row. Yes, this is just numbers divisible by 5, but not by 2. These are numbers divisible by 7. And here there are numbers divisible by 3, but not divisible by neither by 2, by 5, nor by 7. And then it continues in standard way. Here we have multiples of 11, multiples of 13. So still we have a kind of the sieve, but a bit different. How would you describe this structure? We can say that this is again Cartesian sieve, but when primes are taken in a different order, 2, 5, 7, 3, 11, 13, and so on. And the question is, why 3 jumped here? Why it is 3 is clear, because here we considered every third number. But why it was placed between 7 and 11? Because here we have index 3m, and when m is divisible by 3, this is divisible by 9. So this is the proper place for numbers divisible by 3. Actually, it means divisibility by 9, and 9 is between 7 and 11. I tried to describe a general structure. So you can imagine that if we look closely to this level, we would find again a kind of sieve. So it is a kind of structural, a fractal structure. Each level is a sieve by itself. I don't have calculations for very big numbers, so it's mainly a guess, but it looks rather plausible. So if we want n to range over arithmetical progression d to d and so on, where d has such a factorization into prime factors, then corresponding sublevels split according to the divisibility of m by numbers p1, p2, and so on, where these prime numbers are ordered in such a way that p in the power k p plus 1, kp2 plus 2, and so on, go in increasing order. In our example, we had m equal to 3, k2 was 0, k3 1, all others were zeros. P1 is 2, p2 is 5, p3 is 7, p4 is 3, p5 is 11, and so on, because we have such ordering 2, 5, 7, 9, 11, and 13. I will show you what you have already seen. I made calculations for the function where we drop one factor from Euler product. We exclude here p equal to 2. This is just this function. So I took 100 pairs of conjugate zeros that are function, 201 zeros of this additional factor, and calculated corresponding deltas. And they look like this. You saw it already. At the beginning, coefficients were like coefficients of this product, then like coefficients of this product, And finally, they were very small. And the question was, how would the sieve look for these strange deltas? It looks like this. So again, we have levels. We have this strange curve. But after the point when they change the behavior, we have again a kind of level seemingly the same. So the structure is not clear at all. I haven't much calculations with these combinations of zeros of zeta and zeros of the additional factor. So maybe later calculations would make it more clear what happens here. I will return for the moment to von Mankell theorem. As I explained, it is the way in which prime numbers know, zeta zeros know about prime numbers. Is this theorem surprising or not? In a sense, it is not surprising because we have Euler product and also we have Adamard product for this multiple of zeta. And this product is over zeta zeros. So combining these two product expressions, taking logarithms, we can formally easily obtain this identity, but some efforts required to justify it. So in fact, von Mankell theorem is another incarnation of Euler product. My original idea was that the sieve of Eratosthenes is also in this incarnation of Euler product. This is why the primes appear in this strange way. I don't see any way how to prove it, how to pass from Euler product to these levels on the sieve, but it looks rather plausible. And recently, I published a paper with my co-author, Gleb Belyakov, in the journal named Experimental Mathematics. And one of the referees wrote, okay, it's very nice that you take zeros of zeta function on the critical line, and all this is nice, but is your technique powerful to detect a zero outside of the critical line if it exists there? And he in particular suggested to consider the following function, which was originally studied by Davenport and Heilbronn, and then was studied by many other authors. Why this function is of interest? It is defined by Dirichlet series. Coefficients go in a repeated way according to the n modulo 5. And this tau, the tau is selected in a very special way. It should be like this. In fact, this function f of s is a linear combination of the two L functions modulo 5 corresponding to the two non-real characters. And this function is known to have a functional equation. A functional equation is considered to be a necessary property for analog of the Riemann hypothesis to be true for this particular function. But this function has no Euler product. Euler product is also considered to be a necessary condition. And as a result, this function has zeros outside of the critical line. And so we performed additional calculation. We took zeros lying on the critical line and calculated corresponding coefficients. What did we discover? It turned out that almost everything happens as before. These new deltas also allow to predict non-trivial zeros gave a very good approximation. They can predict further zeros on the critical line, and also they found the zeros outside of the critical line. So in the case of this function, zeros on the critical line know about the zeros outside of the critical line. So in fact, it seems to be rather powerful, and so if we have zeros for zeta function outside of the critical line, we probably could also detect them in this way. But at the moment, it is for me of interest to look whether we have a sieve for this function. And I believe that there could be no sieve. The sieve is due to Euler product. We don't have Euler product. What would be the picture here? It looks a bit different than before. What is the difference? Of course, special role plays number 5. So points corresponding to n divisible by 5 are given in red. They are here, they are here, and they are here. We'll start from the lowest one. These two points correspond to n 125 and 250. That is divisible by 5 cubed. Points here correspond to 25, 50, 75, 100, and so on. So they correspond to values of n divisible by square of 5, but not divisible by cube. Points with cube fell lower. And at last, here we have numbers divisible by 5, but not divisible by 25. Those divisible by 25 fell lower. And the rest is the same as before. Here we have numbers divisible by 2, but not divisible by 5. Divisible by 3, but not divisible neither by 2 nor by 5, and so on. So we still have a kind of sieve, but with more complicated structure. So if you want to decide on which level to place particular number, we need first to see if it is divisible by 5 or it is not divisible by 5. If it is not divisible by 5, we need to look at the lowest prime factor of this number. But if it is divisible by 5, we need to look for the largest power of pi of 5 dividing this number. So for me, it was very surprising that a function without Euler product nevertheless knows about prime numbers in this way. And so it might make more difficult to prove these relationships, even for zeta function. So the reason might be a bit different. And also what was different, the total behavior of these deltas for this function is like this. So here we have levels, here we have this strange curve, but now instead of going to zero, it jumps rather high. Now we will return to, how to say, to the title of the lectures for approximations of the zeta function. So we study such finite Dirichlet series, and we say that this is something similar to this infinite series. So here is this strange sign saying that the first initial coefficients here are close to coefficients here. And this function is like this. And we can ask whether we can calculate zeta of s as such ratio. We take our finite sum and divide by this difference. This relationship is very weak. Only a few coefficients and only approximately equal. But nevertheless, as in fact we already saw, this is a good approximation to zeta of s. And here are more examples. If we take s large and real, we get a very good approximation of this ratio and to the value of zeta, more than 100 correct digits. That's not much surprising because for these values of s, the series for zeta converges and very fastly. For 2, we have a bit worse approximation, but still good. We can go very high on the imaginary axis and still have a good approximation. We have good approximations on the critical line, and to the left of the critical strip, we still have good approximation. And we can go rather far from the critical line on the real x and still have good approximation. And even we can go much to the left of the critical strip and go rather high and obtain still good approximation. If you go much further, the approximation is not as good, but still 64 common digits. So this gives a rather good approximation to this value. And I already discussed this question, why we have this factor here, the factor that was used by Euler. So we see that its role is just to cancel the pole, but there could be different Dirichlet series canceling this pole. And let us do the following. We have our finite Dirichlet series, which looks like this. And we will just divide the left-hand side by zeta. And I will denote this function nu n of s. So this is just formal division. We take finite series and divide it formally by infinite series. It will produce us some infinite series, and I denote its coefficients like mu n n. And we know that this infinite series looks like 1 minus 2 times 2 minus s. So here these numbers are defined via this division, but we can give explicit expression, and actually we already had it. These are the same numbers mu, and you saw that in fact all larges are very small, and so this is very good approximation. So if you want to define them for big values of n, we can just formally define these numbers equal to zero because we have finite sum here. And so we have this identity because this was just a definition of this mu. We divided this series by series. So here just changed the order of numbers. The question is, what would happen if we cut this infinite series to some number L and try to approximate zeta of L by the ratio of two finite series? So we have finite series with large value for n, and here we have a finite series with some L, and we saw that already with L equal to 2, we got a good approximation. But it turned out that if we take for L greater values, approximations will be much better. So here is the table. It was just a case when S is equal to this value, n is 3001. If we take our previous approximation, we get more than 100 common digits. But the value of mu is of the same order. When we add one term here, we get much better approximation. The value of 4 is of the same order. When we add one term here, we get again better approximation. And so we get better and better approximations for the values of zeta when we use not just a finite Dirichlet series, but ratio of two finite Dirichlet series. We have many terms in the numerator and not so many terms in the denominator. We cannot continue for infinity because here we see that at first these numbers mu decrease very fast, but after some point they begin to grow up. So probably the situation is the same as with using asymptotic series. We need to stop at some point adding new terms as the best point where we reach the best approximation.